Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician, Danny Whitson. It is cold outside. Winter is here. The groundhog nailed it, and I would like to beat the hell out of him. No, really, I know Nashville just got an ice storm, so my friends out in Nashville, be careful. I do know more bad weather is on its way, too. It even snowed in Texas. So that tells me that climate change is real. So yeah, that debate's over with. Anyways, I'm glad you guys tuned in here to the Abracadam Podcast. And let's get right into giving our sponsors a shout out. I don't know about you guys, but I'm really looking forward to get some new tattoos. Some new ink therapy, baby. I need some. And I couldn't think of any other better place to go than Rosie Tattoos. Yes, this episode is also brought to you by Rosie Tattoos, custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. Now, let me just say, Rosie has been doing my tattoos for years. She's done all my tattoos. My sleeve was done by Rosie. People ask me all the time. They stop me and say, hey, I love your stuff. Where'd you get it done? Well, I got it done at Rosie Tattoos. Rosie offers free consultations online by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. They will sit down, talk to you about what it is you want to do, and make sure they get it perfect. Rosie Tattoos is located at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Give Rosie a call at 865-281-3451. Send her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. And be sure to check out her website at rosietattoos.com. Make an appointment. Get you some ink work done. You know you want to. And I tell you, once you do, working with Rosie, you definitely won't regret it. Rosie Tattoos. Now, if you're the kind of guy that cuts his own hair, that's not a good life choice, man. It's not. The kind of guy that cuts his own hair is the same guy that will try to represent himself in court. And we've all seen that guy try to represent himself in court, and we think and we just know that that guy's going to jail. So same thing with cutting your own hair. Don't cut your own hair. You'll go to jail. Okay? So that brings us to today's sponsor, the Grove Barbershop, located at 98 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Owner and operator Jeff Hackler is one heck of a barber, folks. He's been cutting my hair for years, and you ain't never seen my hair look bad now, have you? No, you have not. Now, making an appointment with Jeff is super easy. All you have to do is go to grovebarbershop.com. You pick your time, pick your date, and then all you got to do is just show up. Yes, there's no wait, no line. It's just you and Jeff. Everything is clean. You get in there, he'll hook you up with a nice haircut, and then you're back on your feet. There you go. And you don't have to worry about going to jail. Be sure to check Grove Barbershop out at 98 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give him a call at 865-482-2210. And definitely check him out at the website at thegrovebarbershop.com. Okay, Abracadamits. Buckle up for this episode because it's going to be a ride. This episode definitely is going to make you scratch your head and get you thinking about some things that you probably hadn't thought that deep about. For example, if a ventriloquist farts, does his butt cheeks move? Now, I'm sure you have never, ever thought of that before. But now you're thinking of it. No, but this episode, we get a little deep. And I've been wanting to have this guest on here for a while. He is one of the most creative people that I know. He's always constantly working. I've known him for a few years, and he can take things down a rabbit hole, and he's going to get you scratching your head. So, Abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with videographer, creative director, stand-up comedian, and host of The Box, Kirk Nolan.
All right, I'm excited for this episode's guest. Today we got my good friend, stand-up comic, Kirk Nolan. How you doing, Kirk?
Good. How are you, Danny?
Doing good, man. It's been a few years.
It's been a few years, yeah. Look at you. I was saying, you look at how dapper you look, man. Styling with that nice jacket and the haircut, and you really look, I used to work as a bodyguard in LA. You look very bodyguardish right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
See, now this is really means something coming from you.
Is your wife on the side that you looked over right now? Is that?
Oh, no, actually, I'm alone. No one's down here.
You look like you looked over at her or something.
That's just me admiring myself, bro. I'm posing. That's the cool thing about you, man. You're like, Kirk Nolan is like, he's like wine or like a good block of cheese. You know what I mean? Because first of all, you never know how old this guy is because he doesn't age. He doesn't age at all. It doesn't look like.
Yeah.
So I'm going for the Kirk Nolan thing.
Someone else said that to me, I guess. I guess I'm lucky, I guess. After everything I've been through, I guess age is probably one of the things the universe gave me. So my mother gave me, by the way. My mother gave me the young look because she never aged. She was young till her dying day. So
there you go, man. Good genes.
My brother looks young. Yeah, my older brother looks very young. So, yeah, still for his age.
And yet you have been through a lot. So, yeah. And hey, that's not bad. Everything that you've been through. And, you know, most people look like hell, but the kind of crap that you've been through. So,
yeah, that's true. That's true. So I can't complain. So,
well, I tell you what, if you don't mind, go ahead and for the listeners and the viewers, introduce yourselves. Let them know who Kirk Nolan is.
My name is Kirk Nolan. I'm a video producer. I was a stand-up comedian for most of my adult life. And now I create short-form stories along with documentaries for companies around the world and try and survive in this pandemic. I guess that's as quickly as I can say it.
Now, some of your projects, you've got The Box, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the, I guess it's almost like the suicide awareness, the tribe. So now those things kind of keep you, I know they keep you busy because you do a lot of work with that.
Well, I mean, I've probably built at least 20 different web series for different companies, including myself. And right now I have published my online documentary was on Instagram with over 12,000 pieces of content, but then I was deplatformed because of my views, which happened to me quite often over the last decade. So I've witnessed this. You know, I've been immersed in this world of censorship and the approaching boots of the iron fist that we are seeing right now. I've been talking about it for the last decade. So, yeah, and then along with having a suicide event happen to me, that's been a lot of, now my content is just basically every day I vlog and talk about things that are going on in the world, my channel. I've built a new channel and it's just very socially relevant, and I'm back to publishing videos again, but this time around, now I'm turning into a teaching vlog.
Now, first of all, you are amazing. You put together some, you know, pretty cool content that you put out there. Now, you said you were deplatformed.
Yeah.
What happened?
I've been deplatformed a number of times. It doesn't, nothing has to happen except you have a big mouth. I'm a troublemaker. So, and again, I just said it to you. I published over 12,000 pieces of content on Instagram alone. When you publish that much content, then the margin of error, the margin of the machines catching you and tagging you on things is going to really become a lot different than most people. Like when people go, well, why do you get deplatformed all the time, Kirk? I go, well, go look at my fucking channel and watch what I'm talking about. And then you'd understand how people get deplatformed so much. I've had friends who've had Amazon stores, by the way, Amazon stores that they've had for 5 years and they've been deplatformed, shut down after 5 years with no ifs, ands, or buts, no like why you did it. They can never find out why. It's just you broke the rules of the game. You broke our rules and you're done. And on Amazon, it becomes a game there because they deplatform people to take over whatever that genre is that they're becoming big at. So
that makes now, sense. So what is the content? What's getting the red flags thrown at?
You mean for me?
Yes.
Oh, for me, it's just, I mean, nowadays it doesn't have to be anything, but just whatever they decided is, I think what I think did it this time around was when that gentleman was shot in the back 7 times in Rochester, New York, and then the other gentleman had a bag put over his head and was choked to death by the police. I made a number of videos about that talking about it because it was the most horrific thing I've ever seen in my whole life. And shortly after that, they started tagging me and telling me that my videos were violating their service. They were really just trying to stop those videos from being published. Not just me. I had other friends that were having the same kinds of problems. And then eventually they just deplatformed me. I had 55,000 followers. So that's a good reason to deplatform me, to shut me down. I mean, before this had happened, I had 10,000 followers on Facebook and a bunch of Trumpians were running around in my feed. And somebody had said to me, well, you have a lot of influence being a video producer and all these followers. And shortly after that, Facebook deplatformed me. So, I mean, we're just living in a time where people can just, you know, complain about you, number of people can complain about you, and you can get deplatformed very easily.
Man, but, I had.
By the way, what I just said to you and your listeners, hopefully that makes sense to you.
It does. I hear, I don't agree with the, I see exactly what you were trying to say and what you were saying with your videos. I'm in a weird place right now because, on the other side of things, Twitter, you know, banned Donald Trump for life. Now, but this is my biggest thing. I called complete bullshit on this. And the reason why is because Twitter waits to the end of his presidency to ban him, not during his term when he was putting a lot of reckless tweets and causing a lot of chaos and with the things that he was saying, but they waited till he was no longer making them money anymore. You got people, you know, Trump supporters who say this isn't right, you know, freedom of speech, yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, you know, it's no different than a business not, you know, than a bakery not wanting to make a cake for a gay couple. So even though, I mean, I think that's bad business, but if they, you know, if it's a private business and they don't want to make you the damn cake, go get a cake somewhere else. Same thing, you know. Now, with what you were doing, I've seen some of the videos. I didn't feel like you were saying any type of, trying to put a negative message. It seemed like you were just, speaking your opinion on an issue that probably needed some awareness brought to it. So it's kind of interesting that they would, push you off the plate there the way they did.
Well, it will all depend on where you're sitting on the fence about what I have to say. So, you know, you happen to have a much more open-minded viewpoint of things, but it all depends. All you have to do is just look at cancel culture all around us and the things that are going on today in the world and the censorship that has been going on. This just didn't happen with Trump. This has been going on for a decade. I mean, you and I were talking about this in the very early stages of what was happening. And even then you were afraid to talk about it online with me. And I understand why a lot of people are afraid to talk about it. It impacts your work. It impacts in every aspect, but you know, I was talking about what was happening, what is happening right now. I was already telling you it was about to happen. You know that I said it. And I don't even have to tell people, hey, I told you so, because I've published 12,000 pieces of content. I have the breadcrumbs of my life to prove it, to prove what I'm talking about, like that I talked about this. And people always go, well, how did you know this, Kirk? What are you into global, you know, politics, geopolitics and stuff that you would notice? I go, no, I've been gaslit. Like when Danny knew me, I was living in Tennessee with my wife. I got gaslit by the best. And that gaslighting procedure is what helped move me down the abyss and send me down the road to a place where I finally lost all sense of reality and I tried to kill myself. And so I know what this looks like. And that's why I knew what was happening. I could see it in front of my eyes. The same techniques, the same things being said, the same things being done. I was watching the descent into madness, because you have to remember, a lot of people forget, I'm just coming out of this now. 5 years ago, this happened to me. I just celebrated my fifth anniversary of my rebirth. And this was the first year, the fifth year, where I actually, my brain feels like it's totally together again. And so, you know, when this happened, it just triggered me like crazy, you know, like it's triggering everybody right now. And so I'm just familiar with this territory. So when I started talking about it and yelling about it, and all my friends and people were coming and saying, oh, you're crazy, Kirk, this is never going to happen, I'm like, okay, yeah, all right. And now here we are.
So what was your hint? Because I do remember talking to you, and I remember you, even in the conversation, you went down some wild paths, and I was like, wow, I don't know if I'm going to see all this, but it looks like you have hit the nail on the head on some things that's just recently going on. What made you start looking at things the way you are looking at them now? I mean, besides, I mean, I know you had the, you know, what happened to you 5 years ago, what you went through. But I mean, instead of just rolling over and dying, it looks like you rubbed your eyes and you started looking at things a little deeper.
Well, I mean, my background has turned me into a survivor. I mean, I'm just a survivor. My mother was a survivor. My household's a survivor. I mean, I started out in a track that has forced me to have to just, when things get bad, to find an answer and to move forward. 5 years ago, I didn't think that was going to be possible. And part of the reason I didn't think that was going to be possible is because the doctor said first that I would be dead. So that was just a given. I wasn't going to make it through the night. There was just no way I was going to survive. They should just start planning my funeral, which everybody was doing. And then to survive through the night and then wake up from, wake up days or a week later, I think it was a week later from the coma that I was in and on the machines, then they said I would be a vegetable for the rest of my life. Because I don't think you remember this, Danny, but I woke up after intensive care, I woke up in the kidney dialysis floor. And that was very confusing for me when I woke up. I couldn't understand why I was surrounded by dialysis machines and dialysis patients. And then I discovered that my kidneys had shut down. I had complete renal failure. And so they weren't sure if my kidneys would be able to function normally again. So all of these things that happened, along with this immense amount of brain damage that happened to me, I really wasn't sure if I was going to be able to come back from all that. And so what people don't understand about my journey in these last 5 years was I dug my feet in, and instead of, you know, curling up in a ball in a fetal position, and especially at my age, because, you know, I'm going to be 58 years old. So especially at my age, I was like, you know, I don't have a lot of time left. This is the fourth quarter for me. So it's either I have to figure out some answers for myself, or I have to just, you know, start contemplating a life that's going to be really difficult for me physically and mentally because of all the damage that has been done. And so I just dug my feet in, and these last 5 years, I have worked very, very hard. You know, I say this on my channel, I teach this and I've taught this to my students, and that is, when things get really, really hard, what you have to really focus on is getting back to your process. It's what I learned as an entertainer, what I learned as a comedian. Always get back to your process. And if you get back to your process and you focus on that, your art will help guide you through the valley of the shadow of death and get you back out the other end. And so that's what I did. And so these last 5 years, I've been reading and studying and watching all the videos that I can. Just every day I get up and I have a routine of filling my mind full of information. And because I was a comedian who talked about a lot of these topics in the news and what was going on and very edgy topics, then I started taking on a lot of that. And I just started studying more and really looking at things, because I had read a lot about you could rebuild the neural pathways to your brain. And that in old age, people, we've now discovered that we used to think that people couldn't build new neural pathways in their brains. We didn't think that people could improve their cognitive functions, any of that stuff. Now we know that that's not true and that can happen. So once I started reading all that, I started going, all right, all these parts of my brain that have been killed off now, I got to figure out a new way to do it. And you remember me 5 years ago, I was stuttering. I was having seizures. I couldn't even have a full conversation with people. So it's been a really, really long, long journey, but one that's been very, very rewarding. And because of my autodidactic background, it's really helped me to really focus on this. And then when I became a teacher, that was a job I took on when I came back to life. I decided to become a teacher instead of going back to comedy. And being a teacher really helped me more, because as I was teaching my students, they were teaching me, and I was learning more, and my brain was just expanding even more. And so looking at all of what we're seeing now, to come back to your question and wrap it up in a bow right now, it's been 5 years of me staring at the news every day. I immerse myself in information every day, like 24 hours a day. And when I was, and I've been a creative director for 4 different companies. And so when you're a creative director, just like a comedian, you learn to do a lot of research on topics. And so whenever I find a topic that I'm interested in or that bothers me emotionally as an artist, I dive into it and I go into it with every layer. And when people come watch my channel and they see me creating content on my vlog, then what you see is all the different pieces that lead up to that. So now what I've built in the new channel is a teaching vlog. Since one of my students said to me one day in class, said, you know, Mr. K, I go to your Instagram spot, and when I look at your videos, I think to myself, wow, you're teaching the world, Mr. K. And that made me smile. And I thought, yeah, I kind of am, man. And so he said, yeah, I really love that. So when my other channel got taken down, I decided to make this channel much more of a teaching vlog and to show people, especially in this environment, by the way, where that's another thing that I said 5 years ago when I knew you, Danny. I said to all the comics that I knew, guys, better get ready. Everything's going to be online. Your act will be online. Everything will be online. Everybody just looked at me like I was talking to them with 2 fucking heads, but it's now here. It is now here. And so now in my teaching vlog, I'm showing people how I build content. And what I've done in the last decade is something I don't see anybody online doing, by the way. I don't even see the best video editors doing it online. And that is being able to take content and bring it down into a 1-minute piece that looks very much like a Netflix trailer. That's what I'm aiming for in my 1-minute pieces. And I'm not quite there yet, because I'm still trying to figure out how I can stick in promotions into that 1-minute piece. Like when I was a creative director for companies, like I want to be able to condense it down, because the box, I know I'm throwing a lot of things out, but I've created a new show that's a street show. It's called The Box. And it was going to be a live theater show, but now we can't do that. So as soon as the weather breaks again in Detroit, I'm going back on the streets and I'll be doing my show on the streets. And so The Box really is the culmination of a lot of things, of translating my stage show that I was a comedian for 20 years of my life and translating that into a digital show. And in fact, a friend of ours, Marcus, recently said to me, we were talking, and Marcus said to me, man, you're ready for all this, aren't you? I said, yeah, of course I'm ready. He's like, no, you're really ready. Like, you have a whole show and content. And yeah, I've been doing this for a decade now. So now all my stuff is digitized. Everything is digitized. So like I tell my friends, I have 30,000 videos on my phone alone. Just my phone.
Wow.
That's not counting the 30 terabytes of information that I have, video information that I have to cut with. So at this stage, what I built for myself, when I was a kid, my mother loved puzzles. And she used to build these puzzles with like thousands of pieces, Danny, like on the dining room table. She would spend months building these elaborate puzzles. And I never got it, never understood it. I never liked games. My brother likes games and stuff like that. Never did that. But what I've built for myself in this last decade is a huge digital puzzle. And every day now, because I'm trapped now. See, I'm trapped. I'm a monkey in my cage now. Because I have illnesses now that will make me so susceptible to this virus that I'm now trapped in my own fortress of solitude. And see, I knew that would happen one day again. After you've been living behind a dumpster in the cold, right, and you're homeless, then you're always preparing for the next time that could happen to you, right? And so I knew something would happen. I thought maybe something will happen, because when you're rebuilding your life at 50, you can't do it fast enough. You know what I mean? So you can't rebuild fast enough with all the things that are happening. So I had to build something. I knew that if I ended up on the streets or something with just my phone, I could have something that would keep my mind busy and keep me building my mind and putting it back into shape so that I could be the person that I am in front of you today. And so that's what I've built. I've built just a puzzle, a digital puzzle. And every day I wake up and I look through the news and I go through everything and I start building content and stories. And I build, you know, I begin by building 1 minute pieces, because that's my forte, is building 1 minute documentary pieces. And then from those 1 minute pieces, like Russian Dolls, after I build, like I've told some of my friends, I literally have, I looked at this like my stand-up act, right? So for comedians out there who are trying to translate their act into a digital show, this is what I did. Right. In my show, my stage show, for years, my friends will tell you this about me as a comedian. I had a show that would run for an hour and keep you laughing that whole time. And the reason that it was like that was because I built my show in pieces. So I would build, let's say, a 2 or 3 minute or 4 minute piece, because I came from the theater. So this wasn't about getting on Johnny Carson for me. This was about building like these stories. I wanted to build stories. And so I started redigitizing my show and building these stories into these 1 minute pieces, because 5-10 years ago, I saw the world moving in this direction. And so now, like Russian Dolls, my editing style is called Kintsugi, which is taking old things and reformatting them into new things, just like that
philosophy. What did you say? What was that called again?
Kintsugi. Kintsugi is a Japanese philosophy of anything that's broken and old can be turned into new. You've seen it. It's where they take the bowls that are cracked and they put gold in them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love that philosophy. I followed it for a long time and I started using it in my editing style, which is taking old content and reformatting it into new content. That's what's made me a good creative director. I can go through people's companies' videos and start looking at them and start reformatting them into new ideas and new structures and new narratives. So if you take all that into place and all of that that I've been doing over the last 5 years of building narratives, looking at the news like a creative scientist, because that's what comedians are, you know,
yep.
Just looking at everything, creative scientist, and then piecing together stories and redoing them and doing other people's stories and other people's stories and other people's stories. That's how this all came about, to where I started seeing things that my friends would go, well, how come you see that and I don't see it? I go, because I build narratives and I'm watching the narratives change every day. So now what I'm doing is taking those 1 minute pieces, and now I'm building storyboards on Instagram. If you see people when they post pictures, like one, you can post like up to 10 pictures. Well, you can post up to 10 1 minute videos also. Did you know that?
I did not know that. No.
So you can post up to 10 1 minute videos, and that makes a strip, a 10 minute strip. So now what I'm reformatting my mind for is I'm building 1 minute pieces, then those 1 minute pieces turn into 10 minute pieces, and those 10 minute pieces become a 1 hour show.
Now this is for Instagram. So you can just do a 1 minute video post on Instagram and you can do that up to 10 times, or explain that to me.
On Instagram, they have a where you can flip, you can swipe, right?
Yeah.
And so you can put up to 10 pictures, but people just think about pictures. They don't ever think about video. So again, this is another reason I get deplatformed, by the way. I'm always trying to figure out a way to beat the system. I'm always trying to find a way to beat the computers. There's no way to beat the computers, but I'm always trying to find a way to move my way around like a little video hacker or something. I'm not a hacker, but I'm always trying to find ways to do that. So I'm republishing stuff. I'm doing things. I'm using, you know, I have a huge library of my own music. I have other friends who offer music to me, but I'm also trying to see what the changes are happening in the algorithm. And you can only do that if you're brilliantly at computers, or if you're like me, you're this guy who works in front of the monkey machine all day long, 24 hours a day. And you start to try to figure out what the holes are and how you can get around the system.
Now that's interesting. Okay. Because you covered a lot of stuff there real quick.
So, and did I answer your question? I did.
You absolutely did. But I got some things that I'm curious about, because if the listeners, you know, or people who know you now know you from the content that you put out on Instagram and other, you know, other platforms and stuff. But, you know, like I said, we talked about you as a stand-up comedian, which you were a fantastic stand-up comedian. And what I do something very similar like that whenever with my show, any bit that I'm talking about in my show, I do a lot of research on. I try to learn everything I possibly can about that ridiculous topic that I'm talking about.
Right.
And it seems like in a lot of ways you have took your stage show and, you know, went digital in a lot of ways. Now, but let me ask you this, because this is something I've created a virtual show, because yes, we are digital. You're right. We are digital, but I'll be honest with you, Kirk, man, I miss the stage, bro. I miss it so much. Do you ever miss the stage? Do you miss live stage, live entertainment?
Not anymore. I don't. That's a quick answer. Not anymore. I don't. I did in the early days. That's why I was telling Deborah, I was saying to her, you know, it's very painful for me to watch this now. I didn't know how painful it would be, because I'm at the other end of this tunnel that people are just entering in. And see, people don't understand what is happening to them right now. See, what you're talking about right now is people have lost their purpose. Think about that for a moment.
Oh, no, you're right.
This isn't something that just happened overnight. I mean, this is something that was planned for a long time by the powers that be. They knew this was going to come down. You and I were talking about this when it first happened. They knew this was going to happen. People can go online and look at it all day long. They knew automation and AI was now going to start taking over stuff. I mean, we've been watching it, malls closing, you know, people losing their jobs, whole industries being shut down. We all knew we were marching towards this. They wanted it to move a lot faster. When you read about it and you watch all the documentaries on this, the powers that be, they wanted to move this process faster and they didn't know how they were going to do it. And then the pandemic hit. And like Naomi Klein says with the shock doctrine, they utilize this to jump on board and get everybody moving in the direction that they wanted them to.
Okay, so all right. Because now you're getting into the creepy conspiracy realm. So now, this is what I want you to talk about this. Absolutely. I want you to talk about what you had told me. I want you to talk about it. Now, first, before we go into it, though, okay?
Oh, I'm going to stop you for a minute, and I'm going to correct you on something that I get tired of everybody saying, all right?
Okay.
And that is, because it doesn't make sense to you right now, you just use the word conspiracy theory. And that is what happens a lot, especially in the news, that really ideas that because they're not in the mainstream, but they're out there and they're reputable ideas. I'll give you an example. Fucking UFOs.
I know.
Are you kidding me? They just admitted to this shit, and now everybody's been calling everybody a fucking nut and conspiracy theorist over it.
What's crazy about that?
You just go, wow, what? Okay. So, you know, crazy and conspiracy theory, that left the station a long time ago, man. I don't know about you. I don't know about everybody else, but that train left the station a long time ago.
It's nuts, man, because right now, I remember when this happened a couple years ago. What is the big old hunk of cigar shaped looking thing that passed by Earth a couple years ago, and a lot of scientists tried to say, "Oh well, it can't be extraterrestrial. It's got to be this or it's got to be that." And just recently there was a Harvard scientist that's saying, well, there's a big fat chance that it was a UFO. And now granted, he is not, I mean, the mainstream is still trying to make an excuse as to what it could be, but he did bring up a point. He said, one of the big theories that it could be is a comet, but it's releasing hydrogen instead of the normal type of gases. That's why you can't see its tail. And then he said, but keep in mind, we have never seen anything like that in the history. We don't even know if anything like that actually exists.
Right.
So that excuse is just as far-fetched as saying that it was extraterrestrial. But on the flip side, we don't, like, they don't even know if that type of comet exists, but they do know life forms exist in the universe because we exist.
Right.
So it was an interesting thing that they brought up. And then on top of it, everything else that is coming out, there's a lot coming at us right now. Now, and when you say the word, and when I say the word conspiracy, I don't mean it as any type of insult or because with that word, a lot of truths that we do know are truth now started out with that word conspiracy. So when I hear the conspiracy, it just means like, not everything is clear. So that being said, I mean, even with the, like, it's hard to look at the, and I don't want to go down this road because I want to go where you're at right now, but the 9/11 topic. For years, people would bring up 9/11 conspiracy, and I'd be like, okay, that's complete garbage. This is right. you're nuts. Until you start looking into the info on it, and you're like, holy hell. That is weird, you know? So same thing with talking to you.
You got thousands of architects who have come forward and engineers who have talked about that it's controlled demo. I mean, thousands. It's not like just a few people. Thousands and thousands of them have come forward and signed affidavits saying, yes, I totally believe this. So it's really hard when you, and you look at the footage. I've looked at a lot of that footage, man. A lot of it, I've researched a lot of it. And when you look at it, there are, you can't, how can you, it just doesn't make any sense. None of it. I mean, Building 7 alone doesn't make any sense at all.
That's insane. I mean, a fly landed on the building and it goes down.
Yeah. So I think we're in this place now, I mean, rightfully so, we're in a place now where it is, you are in the abyss now. Everybody is right now. You are in a place where reality is not reality anymore. And when reality isn't reality anymore, then how do you know what the truth is? How do you know what really is the truth any longer?
And you know what?
When it's been distorted so badly.
Well, what's interesting about what you just said, you don't know what the truth is anymore. And that is 100% fact. And it's just not going to be with information, but like, you know, they've got the deep face technology where they can put your face on anybody and in your words in anyone's mouth. So there's going to be a point in time in the very near future that you won't even be able to trust video footage of someone.
That point is now. What are you talking about? You're in it now.
That's true. It's happening right now.
You're in a world right now, by the way, your listeners should really wake up to this. You're in a world right now that's being run by AI. There's no way around that. You, whoever's in power owns those supercomputers and control us. And this is a fact, a statement of fact from every scientist out there who is involved in this world in the monkey machine. They'll be the first ones to tell you AI now has achieved. It knows us better than we know ourselves, knows us better than our family members know us. It can think quicker than us, make decisions quicker than us. Just go online and everybody knows the minute you go online, then it's all popping up in your feed. Everything you're thinking, talking, go talk on your devices. It all pops up. So we're already in this world. AI has taken over. They have control of us. And so this was just part of that evolution that we're moving towards, you know, like Elon Musk said, we're cyborgs. We already are cyborgs.
We got our chip right here. So our microchip.
We're recorded everywhere. We're surveilled everywhere. I mean, you know, this is the world we're in right now. It's like when you listen to people talk about, well, if civil war breaks out, what planet are you living on? You're in civil war right now. This is high-tech feudalism. That's what you're living in. You're living in a high-tech version of feudalism. See, in the 1930s, they figured out that killing everybody, rounding them up and shooting them all in the head, that didn't work out so well for everybody. So they try to figure out another answer, and people don't get this. Hitler almost took over the world with this new invention called radio and television. They made sure everyone had a radio, even the poorest people, so that they could disseminate that propaganda. And they called television like the new whipping master for the slaves, for all the people. Now imagine what if Hitler could do, almost take over the world with radio and television. Imagine what these monsters are doing with the monkey machine.
Well, say, okay, so let me ask you this, because you are using the word they, so we need to touch on to find out who they is, okay? And
people say this a lot. You've been watching they, Danny. It's like people have a hard time. You've got all these barriers because, for you, you've got all these barriers because you're a person of science. So anything outside of that barrier, but let me ask you a question. Isn't science and facts just a consensus of opinion? That's when we finally come to a fact. It's just a consensus of opinion. Well, look around at the world you're in right now. You ever going to get a consensus of opinion on things? Not for a while anymore. The people who are in charge are in charge. When I say they, it don't matter. You think Biden's going to make things better? Biden and Obama were bombing more people than Bush was. They were killing more people around the world than anybody. I mean, Trump hasn't even done more murderous deeds than Biden and Obama did. And Bush, forget about it. We all know that story. So when I say they, I'm saying the people who are in power, the corporate power, the plutocrats, Wall Street. I mean, we're dealing with a lot of things here right now. It isn't just one faction, but you're watching war between two factions right in front of your eyes.
I mean, you're definitely seeing, okay, it's almost like there is these two sides that are at war with each other, and the rest of us are caught in the crossfire. So
by hurricane, I call it. Yeah.
that's kind of what it feels like. And now, I mean, do you think though, I mean, okay. Let me put it this way. What do you think's next? I want to hear, what do you think? Cause I mean, we just had the storm in the Capitol, which was, I never in a million years would have thought I would have experienced anything like that in this country.
I thought we'd be living fascism right now. Honestly, I told you this was going to happen. I said it to my friends. I said, here's where we're going. Here's where it's happening. Now it happened. And you know what? Thank God I've been surprised. I got surprised, because if Mike Pence had done what he was supposed to do, we would be in a whole different world right now. Thank God that his cowardly nature pushed him to the place that he refused to do what Trump told him to do. I didn't think that was going to happen, to be honest with you. And all it would have taken was Mike Pence to do what Trump wanted him to do, and we would be having a totally different conversation today.
So what do you mean?
I think if Mike Pence had went along with whatever plan him and Trump had, because you can hear it through the narrative that Trump and him had, Trump was pushing him to create more violence in that Capitol. Trump was pushing him to embrace those people who walk through the Capitol steps and to come in there. That's why at those moments when they were first going in, when you look at all the video and stuff that those people turned on Pence, the reason they turned on Pence was because Pence was refusing to do what Trump asked him to do. Now, if Pence had done that, I think we'd be having a whole different conversation. And I wasn't expecting that, to be honest with you. I thought that that sycophant would just keep doing like Lindsey Graham has been doing and just keep going along with the game, with the program, along with everybody else that has been in. I mean, you can see it's an inside job now. Everybody can see that now. So, I mean, come on. It's right in front of your face.
Let's back up to this summer. The you know, what took place over the George Floyd incident, and which I guess began as protests, but then there was some rioting, absolutely rioting, and things that happened. Now, the thing that it's still, I don't even know if it's getting much attention or talk about, which I don't really understand. It didn't really go anywhere, but it was really kind of interesting that the umbrella guy, the guy walking around in the gas mask who's taking a hammer and beating windows out, and the pallets of bricks laying around town. It's almost like someone was saying, let's start a riot. This is how you do it, kids. What's your take on that?
I mean, my take's been from the very beginning. This country's been seized. It's been taken over a long time ago.
So do you think it's okay, like how we talked about there's two sides fighting, we're caught in the crossfire, or do you think there's a possibility there's just one group that is trying to manipulate both sides?
I mean, there's so much going on right now. It's very hard to discern what is real and what isn't real. Again, it's very hard, and there are so many narratives that are being played out right now, that as I watch the news and I'm building narratives of my own and I'm looking at all the news and all the different narratives that are out there, you can just see all the different things that are going on all at the same time. So in answer to your question, I don't know. I'm going to give you my opinion. All right. This is my educated opinion from watching all the footage that I have been watching. And by the way, this is my latest theory, all right? There's a lot of theories I have about what might happen. And some of them, you know, I call myself a little creative scientist because that's what comedians are. So I have a lot of theories. When people come to my page and they watch me rant and rave, I actually say this to people. I'm thinking out loud. That's what I learned to do as a comedian. I used to do it on stage. I used to have ideas. I would go through the news. I'd see things. And then I go on stage and I would just think about those things out loud. And some things would work and the audience would go for it, and some things wouldn't. But that thinking out loud now has become a multi-layer thing for me now as I look through all the content that's online. So as I look through all the things that I've been seeing, this is what I have surmised this week. All right. Part of the narratives that are going on, by the way. And that is, We're definitely in a war with two factions here. And one faction is Trump, the Proud Boys, and the Nazis on his side, right? And on his side is also Russia, by the way. And when people go, oh, Russia, this is just a hoax. No, it's not. Go read David Clay Johnson. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning author who has been writing about Trump for a fucking decade now and about his connections with the Russian mob and oligarchs and Putin. And we've already seen it with our own eyes. We've seen all the evidence that leads up to that. So on that side is Putin and Russia, and Saudi Arabia is on this side of the fence, got it? And on the other side of the fence is Biden. You hear about the stories about his son and all the money and the deals with China. And Biden and Obama were real chummy with China. This is how we got into this mess, by the way, where China makes everything and owns everything. It wasn't just Obama and O'Biden, it was Bush too. But now we got into this situation and now everybody goes, uh-oh, we're screwed now because they own us. Not only do they own us manufacturer-wise, but they own us because we owe them for so much debt. They've been buying up our land in this country. So take those two factions now. What you've had is a war between two political factions in this country, but those countries are backing those two political factions. And so you're watching this war going down now. And here's the scary part, Danny, when you ask me about what's next, here's the part nobody's talking about right now, except for the independent media people, right? And that is, somebody hacked into our nuclear codes. This is a fact.
When did this happen?
They hacked into our nuclear codes, our nuclear armaments. The New York Times, the Washington Post, everybody. This happened a couple of months ago. They hacked in and got into our nuclear. And when we found out, like the United States found out that the hackers had been in there, guess what? They hadn't been in there for a week. They've been in there for months, months and months. And our government does not know this. They've said this. They do not know how long they were in there and how many back doors and what they've built to move around. And it wasn't just nuclear. It was a whole bunch of our infrastructure that they have hacked into. And this wasn't the first time. This has happened over and over again. But this last time was the most dangerous one of all.
Now, so, did they make
with
this?
Everything going on, I'm going to finish it right now. With everything going on that I just described to you that has a lot of factual basis to everything I just said, all the evidence that backs up what I'm saying, along with what I just said about the nuclear codes, are you fucking kidding? I'm having a hard time sleeping at night wondering what the hell is going to go on. Because the people in the mainstream news, one of the analysts, Nance, Malcolm Nance, was talking about this. He's a former CIA spy, and he's an analyst for CNN now. And he said, we're at the point now where somebody can just go, hey, I got a nuke, and if you don't do what I ask you to do, I'm going to nuke Detroit or Knoxville or wherever. And no one's talking about that right now, but that's where we're at right now. And people are talking about Trump like he's going to walk away quietly. I told you this when it first happened. This is part of gaslighting. You're not going to walk away. He did not spend 4 years doing all this to just walk away from it. So I don't know what's going to happen next, but it's really scary right now.
Okay, hold on. Let's go back to who is the author that you were talking about? What book that had predicted, you said, talking about Trump for years?
Oh, David Clay Johnson.
David Clay Johnson. So this was, he was writing these books saying these things before Trump's presidency.
Yeah, David Clay Johnson has been writing about Trump for a long, long time. And he's been following the money like a lot of people do, like in Watergate. You follow the money. Where is the money going? And what he found out was that Trump Tower is infested with Russian oligarchs. And they've been laundering money through Trump Tower. They buy the condos, right? And they're laundering money. That's what you guys are seeing. I had to say this to Deborah the other day. Not only have I been in the military and I know tactics from that, but as you know, I was a comedian in Los Angeles. And because I was in the military, I became a bodyguard for a lot of top celebrities in Hollywood. I bodyguarded Elton John. I bodyguarded Cher. I actually was a head of security in one of the biggest and most prestigious facilities in Los Angeles that housed all those people. I've dealt with riot control. I've dealt with all kinds of things, right? And I've also studied all this along with martial arts, tactics, all of those things. So to watch it all, when someone like me, who's a tactical person, and my friends who are tactical people who've been in the military are watching it, and you point things out, tactical people go, oh yeah, I can see that. Oh yeah, I can see that. I mean, you guys are watching the raping and pillaging of this country. They're using companies and corporations to launder money. They're doing it right in front of everybody's face. And then they're like folding up those things.
That's definitely interesting.
David K. Johnson followed the money. And when you read his books and you see him talk about it, he will show you how the money all leads to Russia and how indebted Trump is to those people. Think about it. Trump right now, everybody is like, I wonder like where people are. I keep saying I'm living on a floating mental institution in space because I'm watching social media every day. And I'm like going, you have a guy who owes millions and millions and millions of dollars in loans that will be called in the minute he leaves office. On top of that, he is guilty of so many crimes that we know for sure that he's done, him and his family. The only thing that has been saving him from that is the presidency. And everybody just thinks he's going to walk away and give it up to Biden. No, that's not going to happen. You guys are beginning to see the very beginning of decades of not only terrorism, but you're going to see this guy and those ground troops. What do you think he was doing for 4 years with those rallies, Danny? He was building an army. I said that in video after video, and you saw him unleash that army. And they weren't just rednecks and idiots that live in trailer parks. Those were military men. And as a military person, when I was watching the riots on the streets and those Secret Police came out, I told a lot of my friends, those are Eric Prince's guys. Those are not regular police. You can see, you can hear it the way they talk.
You said Eric Prince's guys?
You don't know who Eric Prince is?
No, let's go for it. Who is he? Okay.
So Betsy DeVos has been stripping down education in this country. We know that's a fact, right?
Yes.
She's been destroying the educational system, correct? That's out in the open. Everybody knows that. They've been watching it. Well, Eric Prince is Betsy DeVos's brother. They come from an extremely wealthy family here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Eric Prince was part of Blackwater. He helped build Blackwater. All right. For people who don't know who Blackwater is, that's the company that Dick Cheney created when they invaded Iraq and now is worth billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. And the reason they created these private contracting businesses, by the way, and private contractors, is because in war, then you don't have to follow the fucking Constitution. You don't have to do any of that. When you make people private contractors, then they're not subjected to the rules of engagement and the Geneva Convention and all those things. Now, here's something that'll spin your noodle, Danny. Eric Prince leaves Blackwater, builds his own mercenary business that becomes even bigger than Blackwater. Trump takes him in and he becomes pals with Trump and has been directing and helping Trump with all of this, by the way, right? And now there are 3 to 4 mercenaries to every American soldier in the world.
Really? Wow.
Think about that for a minute. Have your listeners think about that. That's where we're at. So when you're seeing things like those men that were on the streets and they were pulling people in the vans, you remember the secret police, and they were copping, nailing people down on the ground and stuff like that. I was saying to people who didn't know text, listen to the language. Listen to the language. When you're hearing soldiers, hardcore soldiers yell, when they knocked that old man over in New York and he hit the ground and his head split open, what you hear is not a police officer. You hear a trained mercenary yell out to his team, he's leaking. That is what they say. He's leaking. That's what is said in combat. All right? That's the kind of words that are said in combat. That is not the kind of words that are said by police officers. He's leaking. Because what you're saying is, this person's leaking, they need medical attention, and you're moving on. You're just moving on because you're in a firefight and you're moving on to the next thing. And so when you start hearing that language being discussed and you see and by the way, masks, glasses, hoods, no identification, that's mercenaries. And so we've been watching this. It's been playing out in front of everybody's face. But because people don't know any of this, then they just see it as other people talking about it as one big conspiracy theory, you know? And it's not. There's a lot of factual evidence to all of this. And now I don't even know what you can call conspiracy theory and what you can call truth anymore, because we're living in fucking Crazyville now.
So, okay, Crazyville, yes. We are implanted in Crazyville.
I'm a little bloviated at times, but when you bring this up, I do so much. This is my world now. This is what I do. You know? This is what I talk about.
I mean, I don't know what to expect. I mean, people ask my opinion, what did I think would happen this week? You know, and I was like, you know, I have no clue. I don't know. I don't know. And
Let me ask you a question. What do you think the invasion of the Capitol was about?
I think it was, I mean, I guess it was about, to me it appeared, at first I thought the people were pissed off because they thought the election was rigged. And, you know, they were there to, you know, protest. But when I saw people storming inside of the Capitol, it looked like, to me, at first I was like, this is a bunch of deranged, mentally ill people who are caught up in something that is make-believe. That was kind of my take on it. But at the same time, it was just, I couldn't believe I would see people, you know, walking around waving a Confederate flag in the Capitol or wearing an Auschwitz freaking shirt, you know, walking around the Capitol. And I don't know who the hell let Pecos Bill in the damn place, but whatever that idiot guy was about.
You mean
it just blew my damn mind.
The guy with the horns and stuff, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, just blew my mind. But the other thing that was shocking is I would have kind of thought the police department would have been, the Capitol Police would have been a little tougher. I don't know, you know, I'm not in their shoes. I don't know what they were going through, but it was absolutely kind of embarrassing that these guys were able to get into our Capitol and get as far as they did. They even stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop. Did you hear about that? I thought that was...
Oh, trust me. I spend all day looking through video. I'm looking at all that video that every day it gets published. I'm going through all that video. I'm looking at it all. I'm looking at all the video from every perspective, every shot that people have sent. That's what I do. And I've just been looking at it. So I could tell you a lot of things about what I've seen. And I'll give you a teaching moment, something that you can remember. I'll give you a little piece of something that your listeners can do. I learned this from Steven Spielberg a long time ago. I didn't meet him. I watched this and I learned this from Steven Spielberg. Now, what Steven Spielberg says that after he makes his movies, he watches them a number of times with the sound off. Turns the music off, all the volume, everything. He watches them silently. And the reason he does is because he says, then there's no emotional attachment, and I'm able to look and see things that I never saw before, like that I just can't see, because the music and the sound effects and everything, they draw you in a way that if you just listen to it without the sound, you start to see it in a whole different way. And I never forgot that. And so throughout my career, I have always listened to stuff with the sound off, not only my own stuff after I make it, but I watch stuff in the news and then I'll turn the sound off. And another person that we're fans of is George Carlin. And George Carlin has always said, whatever the narrative is, the first narrative is always the distraction. What are the narratives underneath? What are they really trying to do? So when you turn the sound off and you start looking at those, at the invasion of the Capitol, and you start looking at what the narrative of the news is saying and what was really happening, it's a whole different story when you're looking at it with the sound off, right? It's a whole different thing. And when you're looking at it with the sound off, you can see a line, right? A line being formed of military personnel that is in that crowd that moves up the crowd in a line. See, in military battle, what you do is you send in the fucking idiots first. You send in the people who want to make a name for themselves, who want to make noise.
Now, keep in mind, if any Marines are listening right now, I didn't say that. I didn't.
Well, we're not talking Marines, though. We're not talking hardcore battle people. We're talking about if you're a hardcore battle personnel, if you're a military personnel and you want to take the Capitol, think about the last time that happened was what, 1860 something, I think they said in the news, was the last time anything happened in Capitol. So think about that for a moment. The Capitol has never been breached in all that time. No one's ever known if you could even take the Capitol again. No one's ever known what the capabilities are, how things work, even if you know. Now we know the news has been, the mainstream news has been playing this. I mean, the underground news, are you fucking kidding me? They're all over the place about the inside job. But the mainstream news, like CNN and Fox and everybody, they've been showing you that it was an inside job. They've been showing you by those, they tore off the panic buttons. But the biggest part of the inside job was the tour that happened the day before. Did you hear about that? They had a tour of people come through on a tour of the Capitol when there were no tours. And in that tour, they saw people talking about areas of the Capitol that you couldn't get into. And Michael Moore did a great video, by the way, who has been on point for all of this. Michael Moore has predicted every bit of this. And part of it is because he knows a lot of people on the inside. But Michael Moore even said, I have been to the White House so many times. And he says, I could not tell you how to get to Nancy Pelosi's office still. And I've been there. I couldn't tell you how to get to Mitch McConnell's office because the place is so cavernous and big. And it's so hard to get around and to get your bearings in. And Michael Moore said the only way that they got around was they had help. And now we know, we see that. And so this has been happening for a long time, and it's been going on for a long time. So my opinion about this as a tactical person is, this was about trying to figure out if the Capitol could be breached. Right. And when you're looking at those people that are in the Capitol, nobody was really being super violent. All the video I've been watching, nobody was being super violent. And so you're watching a bunch of people who really believe that they are being patriots, and they believe that they're fed up with our government, and they decide to go take the people's house back. Personally, I don't see anything wrong with that. The reason people are so upset about it is because a bunch of fascists did it. If you're not happy with that, then get off your ass and start fighting back. Then start doing what you need to do to take the country back in the direction that you want it to be in.
Well, you know, it's definitely interesting. I've been in the Capitol. I've been to the Capitol, and I know how big it is. And I was like, you know, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, it's interesting that they almost knew exactly where to go. I had no clue that they were, you know, had a tour going on and seeing whose office is where and there, you know, but that's definitely something to scratch your head about. Absolutely.
There's a video of a guy looking through books, like looking through these folders and things and looking through files, right, on the desks, right, in the Capitol, and says something along the lines of something he found. And one of the guys, who's obviously a military guy, tells him in military speak that this is an information data collection moment. Forget about everything else. We're here to gather information. You see, they went in to breach the Capitol to figure out if it was breachable first. And second of all, they went in to gain information. That's why they stole laptops. That's why they grabbed things. They want to make this even worse, but they wanted to get information. They want to find out what people are selling this country down the river about. And so you're watching that happen. And when someone like me is watching a video and I'm hearing all these military terms being yelled out, well, then when you watch the news and they're talking about how these yahoos and these idiots and these militia guys and these backwoods guys, no, that's not the case at all. There are a lot of very well-educated people. There was a kid that was the son of a Brooklyn judge that was in that group. There are a lot of well-educated people there who believe that their country is being overrun. And they're on the other side of these two political factions we're talking about. And they think what they're doing is right. So, you know, that's where we're at now, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, okay, since now we've got to lighten it up a little bit here, okay? We've got to, because this is all depressing as hell. So let's do this.
As Chris Hedges, a very important journalist who has been in the middle of war, who has watched the destruction of countries around the world firsthand, as he says, we are in this situation, Danny, because people refuse to talk about it, and they call it depressing, and they say, well, I don't, like my friends used to say, I'm not interested in politics. Well, guess what, bitch? Politics is interested in you now. You don't have a choice in that.
Okay, absolutely, and I agree with you, and that's part of the interview. I wanted you to talk about it, and a chance for people to hear what you've got to say right here on my platform. Absolutely, but this is what we got to do. Okay, now before you became the digital researcher, let's go back to the stage, okay? Now, every guest that I have on here, I always want some type of story, and you were a comic for a long time. So let's go back to comedy for a minute, and to get off the conspiracy just for a moment, what would you share a hell gig story?
A hell gig story.
Yeah, a gig that you did that was an absolutely nightmare.
Well, I mean, I've worked everything from bars to, and there were a lot of hell gigs in Knoxville that we did together. So, a lot of really hellish gigs. I think the worst hell gigs are ones where you're not even working the audience. You're trying to work like other people, like comics and other people in the room. That makes hell.
Okay.
I've lost a lot of memory, so that's a hard question to answer. But I do have one that has stayed with me that I've told friends, and they always find it really humorous. I was working a private gig in a country club, and it was a huge place, you know, like 500 seater thing. I never normally watch the opener or the feature once I had become a headliner for a long time, because usually nobody was going to touch on any of my stuff anyways. And I would just come in the room when I was ready to go on. So I wasn't aware of what had occurred in the room. So I walked on stage, and as I started my set, I'm about 10 minutes into it, and there's a guy in the front row with his back to me. And he's just sitting with his back to me the whole time. So of course I'm going to focus on that and say something about it. So I start saying something to him, and he starts fucking with me and keeps his back to me. And I'm like, what, you just come to the show? I forget what I said, you know, but I'm doing the typical shit a comic does, and just on and on and on. And we do this banter back and forth, and he's still got his back to me, and I can't understand it. And I finally go, look, why don't you turn around? What are you, fucking blind or something? You can't turn around and speak to me. And he was blind. And no one told me. No one said a word. No one said anything to me. No, the opener didn't mention it. No one mentioned it. And there I was. What are you, blind? And then he turns around with his sunglasses on, and someone goes, yeah, he's blind. And that was it. That turned into 10 minutes of, you know, fun that we had.
Me being, oh my God. I could totally relate. I could totally relate. I've got actually two something similar stories like that. So, oh my God, that's horrible. Okay. We also got to do this, because this is the Abracadam podcast. All right. So every episode of the Abracadam podcast, we have to do some magic. Now we're on Zoom. So, and you're in Detroit. I'm right outside of Knoxville here. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to do some mind reading. Okay. Some long distance mind reading.
Okay.
All right. Now, this is my impression of AI. So here we go. Hop in there and read your mind, man. This is what I want you to do. I'm holding up some cards. I want you just to think of one of those cards. Just don't think of the 10. The 10 will be too easy. That's the first one. But think of one of the cards. You got one.
Okay.
Don't name it. Do you have it?
I have it.
Okay, cool. I'm going to try something. Doesn't always work. I'm going to lose them in the deck here. I'm going to hold it up right here. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you something, Kirk. The card you're thinking of, is it a high card, a middle card, or a low card?
A middle card.
I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to try to cut the deck. So I'm going to go right here, okay? Now, in a loud voice, what's the card you're thinking of?
The one you told me not to pick.
Damn comics. I'll tell you what.
I mean, you told me not to pick the 10 of diamonds.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you serious right now?
Yeah, if you tell me not to do something, that's probably what I'm going to do.
See, that's what sucks. But lucky for you, that's the one I cut to right there.
So that's why you got me to pick that.
No, it's magic. Don't fight it. You just been abracadammed, bro.
I like the eyebrow. That was the best part.
Well, here's one more. And this is just for you. This is special for you. I'm doing this special just for you, okay?
Okay.
Here we go. Hold on. What I'm going to do, I'm going to put – I got the magic glove on, okay? Okay. Now, in magic, there's a reason for everything, okay? Keep in mind, I'm holding my hand behind my back. How many fingers am I holding up behind my back?
I don't know. What, you want me to guess?
Guess. Go for it.
Two.
Two. You know what, brother? You nailed it. Two fingers behind my back. I don't know how, but you're good. There we go. All right. So, also, for that first trick, there you go, brother. All right. Here we go. You gotta have some fun, man.
Those green gloves and chroma key, and then it's just a hand.
We gotta have some fun, man. The Well, I'll tell you what, let me ask you this before we get off here, a little bit off on the conspiracy. Let's get back on the video. Because you're kind of like a vlogger consultant now. So any advice on anybody wanting to get into doing the vlogging the way you do it? Because you're very skilled at it. And if could they reach out to you for any questions?
Absolutely. I mean, I take on private, you know, study with people. I help people. I want to help people. That's part of coming back, as I realize it's very important to help other people. And it helps you to heal when you take that road and take that path and trying to help heal others, because it helps to heal you. So yeah, people can come. But like I said, I'm turning my Instagram into kind of a teaching blog so that people can kind of see how content is built by someone like me and how I go through all the stages and build all the pieces and go through everything. So yeah, people can like watch online, because everybody's going to have to learn now because they're in it. So either you're going to pay people to do it for you, or you're going to have to learn to do it yourself.
Absolutely. It's been a slow process for me putting together a virtual show, but I finally got one that I'm proud of. I totally agree. I mean,
what are the pitfalls that you're having? Have you had any pitfalls, or are you everything moving smooth?
The biggest thing for me was, first I had to get content that would play well and interact through a screen. And also, I saw a lot of magicians, they would go out and, it's almost like they would do the cookie cutter material that they could possibly find that you could do virtually. And to me, I don't work that way. I have to be creative. It has to be something that I've created and put my thought into. For the most part, I've been lucky enough that I haven't had any bumps, but it was having to learn stuff like Ecamm and OBS and those things like that. I didn't want to do. I'm like, I'm an entertainer. I want to be on stage. I don't want to learn this stuff, you know, but it was, you know, this is where we're at. And I don't think virtual entertainment is going to be going anywhere completely. So, you know, it's here. Before we get out of here, where can the listeners find your Instagram, find the box, find things that they, you know, about Kirk Nolan?
Yeah, I'll say that, but let me, I'm going to interject with this for you and give you something. And that is, I know how difficult this is for people. And when you started the show and you said, I really, really missed the stage, I know that feeling, because I remember I was a comedian most of my adult life. And so you caught me on the tail end of not being a comedian anymore, of just, you know, going to open mics, going to one-nighters, things like that. But I was already working as a creative director and already working in this territory of video and translating my show. So what I would say to you and a lot of other performers, because I know that they're really suffering and they're hurting really badly right now, and that is, I felt that same way, and if you just dig your heels in and you just really start to experiment and explore and remember that everything in life is about layers, you know, it's about making mistakes, learning from those mistakes, building on top of them and building layers of things in your life. And if you start to look at that, this is just another layer, and that out of this, because like when I look at you today, I think to myself, let me tell you what you're doing right as a creative director, all right, that I don't see a lot of people doing. First thing is, you made a good background for yourself. You have good lighting. Those are things that people don't do. I can't even tell you, I've had professional people that I have had on my video podcast who just show up and they don't even dress up. They don't even get dressed up, or they don't shave, or they don't wash their hair. I've had people smoking weed while they're talking to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't have any problem with that, but I'm just like, at some stage, if you're an entertainer, you have to start understanding that this should be as professional as your stage show. Absolutely. A lot of people don't see it that way. And so you've done a really good job. You've got a nice curtain behind you. You've got your call to action that is right over your head. You know, you got good lighting where people can see you. You've obviously spent some time learning, so that you're not making mistakes. You know how many podcasts I've been on where people are like trying to figure out all the technical aspects and we're 10 minutes into where the show should have been started and it's not. So you're doing a really great job of doing that. And I would just say to you, just stick it out, because you'd be surprised. You might be the magician that comes up with a whole new idea like I did with the box. Like my friends go, where'd you come up with that idea? I go, I was digging for ideas, looking for different layers, looking for different ways to present my show online that doesn't look like everybody else's show. And that really is the key, isn't it? You want to stand out from everybody else. So in building that show, you're going to find, now that you're building a show, because now you're moving towards video, you're going to find a whole bunch of problems that go into that, you know? But what I tell my comic friends is, what you're heading into now is territory that I've already come out of, and that is this. Once the laughter is gone and you're in a room by yourself, because I used to have friends go, these kids, man, and their videos getting 10,000. That's so easy to do. No, you know now, and a lot of other people know now, being in a room by yourself talking on camera alone is one of the hardest things you will ever do in your life.
That's true.
Your mind is your worst enemy. And so your mind is going to play all kinds of games with you. And that is the real challenge for people. It is finding the confidence that you felt you had on stage, finding that confidence in the solitude of your own studio at home, your own living room, your own dining room, wherever it is. And all of the layers that go along with that, of interviewing people, asking the right questions, listening well, like you said, all of these things are all parts of all the layers that go into making a really great show. So I have confidence in you already, because now I've shown up on your show, which, you're right, it took a little time to finally get on your show, but you've been building it and you've been doing all the right things by taking your time and making sure you knew what you were doing so that you can have a professional show like you're having right now, which is not what a lot of people are doing right now, because they think that somehow we're going to go back. We're going to go back to that. And that's just not going to happen. You know that. And I know that. That's not going to happen. In no world is that going to happen again. At least half of your entertainment life is going to be here. At least half of it. This ecosystem is going to move from online to the stage to back online. And the thing about online is people now get to know us personally, which they never got to do a lot when we were live entertainers and performers. So this is a moment for you. I have faith in you, because I know that you're really creative, you're really inventive, and you're really, really smart. And maybe you're going to find some way to present your magic in a way here that maybe has not been done before, you know? And that's the exciting part for me as an entertainer and as an artist, is every day is going, what can I make today? Like, what am I going to do today? What am I going to create now? Because I'm out the other end where I've got my puzzle now. I've got my show. It's just figuring out all the pieces I want to do in the increments I want to present it in. So people can find me on Instagram at Kirk Nolan the Box. My website is Kirk Nolan the Box. On Instagram, it's The Box with Kirk Nolan. And I'm on YouTube and all the other, at this stage, I've been deplatformed so many times that this isn't about building an audience for me anymore. I don't really care about building an audience. I care about creating the best content that I can, and hopefully have an impact on people before I die, So.
Well, I definitely think you will. You're already making an impact on people. You know, I saw it off the bat, especially when you were doing your teaching there in Detroit. I could tell you're probably doing a lot of good work there. Kirk, man, I always love talking to you, brother. Really, I do. And, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. And thank you for all those things you said, man. You were too kind.
You're welcome. I'm going to say one last thing, and that is, I came to Knoxville at one of the worst times of my life. And there were a lot of people in that town who treated me very, very badly. And you were not one of them. And you've always treated me with respect and kindness. In fact, you've always treated everybody that I've watched you encounter with respect and kindness. And during this moment of this pandemic and already having a show of my own and doing my own thing, I don't really want to be on anybody else's show, but I came on your show because you're a good and decent and kind man, Danny Woodson, and I love you, brother.
Hey, I love you too, Kirk. Thank you, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the conversation, and you and your listeners, go look up some of this shit, because it ain't conspiracy. It's real. It's happening.
Absolutely. Right. Hey, I'm telling you, I'm hitting it as soon as we get off of here. All right, Kirk. Thanks, man. And look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay, I told you it was going to be a long, bumpy ride. And who knows? It definitely got me scratching my head on some things, and it definitely makes you think anytime you talk with Kirk, he is just full of information. So, but definitely check out Kirk's show, The Box. He really makes you think. He gets you thinking about some things. He always gets me thinking. I do want to say thank you guys for subscribing and following Abracadam Podcast. Please keep doing so. Tell your friends, spread the word. All the likes on the Facebook page have been fantastic. Thank you guys so much. And also, before I get out of here, I want to give a plug on a show. I'm going to be at Happy Trails Brewery Saturday, February 20th. Show starts at 7. I'll be going on at 8. So if you are in the Sparta or Cookeville, Tennessee area, come out and see me. Come out and check out a show. It's going to be social distancing safe. People will be wearing their masks. So definitely, if you can and you're in that area, come out and check out my show. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.